Okay, this is Parshas Vayakel. Vayakel, it's also Vayakel Pekudei. I mean, I'm going to put Pekudei, but it's a double Parsha this week. We finished the book of Shemot, and the topic is it weird to be a Shomer Shabbos? So let's go to the video. Here we go. This is class 22. One second. Okay. This is a classic movie. Won Academy Award in 1977, Annie Hall. I don't know if you ever, anybody a Woody Allen fan. So this is a famous scene. So as you know, in general, Woody Allen, basically all of his movies plays basically himself in various forms, which is basically a neurotic secular Jew. Okay, hey, how you doing, Adam? Good. That's what he plays. In this scene, he's dating this discernibly non-Jewish girl, Diane Keaton, who actually became his wife. The scene is this is a scene where he is brought for Easter dinner to the most waspiest of wasp. New England, you know, Easter dinner, okay? It's like super waspy, okay? That's the scene. I'm setting up the scene, and here we go. Go to the share. Alrighty. So what was the why does Annie's grandmother view how does Annie's grandmother view Woody Allen? And why? Don't all yell at once.
Well, she's probably... Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Suzanne. Oh. Fantastic.
She's probably never been around a real Jew.
Right.
So she's just picturing him as the stereotype, because it's sort of like a, you know, it's something she's never seen before. But he's also not a great example because he's like neurotic and.
Right. So that's correct. In other words, he's sitting there, and she looks at him, and she only has one category for Jews. You know, basically a discernible Jew, a chassid. So she views him as got to be that. You know, completely weird, different, and not weird good. Weird bad. Okay? Now, how does he feel about her? What's his what's his vibe? What does he accuse them of being, essentially?
Anti-Semitic.
She, you know, he says, "Oh, she looks like a classic Jew hater." You know, because she was looking at him in that way. Now, obviously, you know, whatever reality or not, whatever. But you know, there's a truth to that, basically, and. To universalize, this is an extreme, you know, depiction, but quite frankly, has anybody here, you know, for whatever reason, been, you know, identified as a discernible Jew, and you got that look like you're from Mars? Have you ever got the Mars, you're from Mars look as being a Jew?
Yes, I've got, I didn't know you were Jewish, and then a flood of questions.
Right. Always a good feeling.
I've had the people looking at me almost like, so where are your horns exactly?
Right, right. So usually it comes when you're sharing, when they ask you, oh, are you going to be here next, you know, next Tuesday? No, I'm going to be off. It's Passover. And they say, you know, whatever. You know, then the questions thing. Anybody have a story that brings that home of the sort of weirdness for being observant?
There was one time at one job I had, and I said I needed to take time off for one of the high holidays, and I was, and then one of my coworkers said, "I thought you were Italian." So, yeah.
I actually find that the awkwardness is really primarily from people who are Jewish but not observant to any extent. So there's only one day for Rosh Hashanah, or there's only one Seder, and there's no need for any other days. And I think it's with those people which is actually more awkward, whereas those that are not Jewish I think are afraid to be offensive. So they are just like, oh, okay. They don't want to say something that may be out of line.
Right, right. So in the modern era of multiculturalism, people are very sensitive to people's ethnic and religious differences. And they don't want to be having even a whiff of being discriminatory or looking down. But a Jew who's of the same culture, they got no problem. In general, in the MJE experience, when I've talked to students who become observant and they have to go speak to their boss, if their boss is not Jewish, no problem. If their boss is Jewish and not observant, it's a pain in the butt because, well, I'm Jewish and I don't observe Shabbos, or I'm Jewish and I keep one day of Rosh Hashanah. You don't have to keep two. Or Passover, we have a Seder at night. What, you know, that's it. You know, how long is Passover? Pesach? One Seder long. It's not 8 days. It's an evening. Not during work hours. So that's the that becomes where it becomes a real culture clash. You know? Alright, so here's another. This is a double video situation. Let me get the Here we go.
For the first time, Ivanka Trump, daughter of real estate mogul Donald Trump, is opening up about her conversion to Judaism. Christian Nilsson, and you're watching HuffPost Live. The 33-year-old model turned businesswoman spoke with Vogue about her 2009 conversion from Presbyterian to Judaism right before getting married to New York Observer owner Jared Kushner, who is an Orthodox Jew. She told the magazine, "It's been such a great life decision for me. I'm very modern, but I'm also a very traditional person, and I think that's an interesting juxtaposition in how I was raised as well. I really find that with Judaism, it creates an amazing blueprint for family connectivity. We observe the Sabbath. From Friday to Saturday, we don't do anything but hang out with one another. We don't make phone calls." She says her marriage and lifestyle is a far cry from that of her parents, who divorced in 1992 after 15 years of marriage. Ivanka and her husband prefer to spend time together every night rather than live the glamorous life of her parents. As for why she's never openly discussed her religion in the past, she says it's a personal matter and an intimate thing between her and her husband.
All right, there we go. All right. All right. Don't need the soundtrack for that. All right, so let's go to the share screen. All right. So here's a question. What do you should a person be open about being a Shomer Shabbos? What do you say? Moshe Chaim Doz, what do you say?
It depends.
Okay. What does it depend on?
Is it going to affect you financially to do it, really? Is it just letting someone know going to end up hurting you for no other reason? If they have to accommodate you, that's one thing. But if it's anything other than to just say, I'm Shomer Shabbos, and it can promote what you think will be a negative perception of you, then it's not going to have a point.
So you're basically saying it's on a need-to-know basis, and if people need to know, you share it. And otherwise, you keep it a secret.
I get being a light to the world and an example, but it doesn't always play out that way.
Okay, so all right. Does everybody agree with Moshe Chaim Doz?
No.
Go ahead.
Telling people on a need-to-know basis, that would imply that then you wouldn't be you wouldn't wear a yarmulke, like, in the outside world. Because I think wearing a yarmulke outside, then you're implying that you're also Shomer Shabbat, so that's kind of like the signal to that. So it seems like you're kind of more or less like hiding.
I've made that choice too, so.
Right, so that's another thing. Another question, which gets in, which is sort of a for guys at least, certainly for guys, the question is wearing a kippah at work? Now, from a halachic standpoint, wearing a kippah is a minhag, is a custom. And if a person feels that it might cause some sort of financial harm or being some sort of prejudice, you don't have to wear the kippah. In fact, when I grew up in Seattle, Washington, through the 70s and 80s, nearly among Orthodox Jews, basically nobody wore kippah work. Zero. Fast track to 2017. If I would tomorrow go visit my sons, either at PwC or Ernst & Young, where they work, or I've gone to, in part in my work with MGE, I've been to Goldman Sachs, been to Bank of America, been to AIG, been all over, to corporate New York, and there are just many, many kippahs, walking around. The situation has changed dramatically. I know a guy that worked for a top, at that point it was top eight firm, and when he had to, after getting the job and telling the person that he's going to be Sabbath observant, they says, "We don't like your kind here," which I think, nowadays I think you can, that's a problem. But back in the 70s, you were allowed to say that and get away with that, or basically discriminate. Now, whenever there's a function at PwC or Ernst & Young, they have kosher food brought in from many of the kosher, midtown establishments to accommodate, you know, the numerous people who are openly kippah-wearing accountants or lawyers, etc. So the reality has changed that it's socially acceptable because everybody does their thing. You got this person's wearing a hijab and this person's wearing a, you know, everybody's showing their ethnic distinctiveness, even in corporate America, which was not the case until basically 20 years ago. So the question is, would you, if you're a guy, or if you're a girl, see, a girl, if she's observing the laws of tzniut in corporate America, it's kind of the same, although in the summertime, that's where it really, you know, the shortness of dress and sleeves, etc., even in court, you know, starts to make, you can spot the observant girls in a second, because they stand out, because they're not dressed they're dressed in a clearly discernible different way. So the question is, how do you feel about dressing in a way that signals, as Sean so eloquently put, signals, I'm an observant Jew? How do you feel about that? Thayer Broxmeyer, what do you say?
I feel like wearing a yarmulke would have people automatically think you're already kosher and Shomer Shabbat. Therefore, it would avoid any kind of questioning about your background.
Oh, so you're saying that a person might feel that if they're still in a growth mode, they don't want to, if they wear a kippah, it means that they're fully consistent.
Yeah. I don't wear a yarmulke partially for that reason alone. I'm not fully kosher. I don't keep Shabbat every day, every weekend fully. I try to do all that I could. If I wear a yarmulke in public, people will think I'm a very much from Jew, and I'm trying to become that way, sure, but I'm not fully, and I don't want to ruin the reputation of a kippah by wearing it in public.
Okay, I hear that.
Or Yom Tov kind of day, or a holy day.
Right, right. Okay, I hear that. What do you guys say?
Well, I think you have to be ready to be held to a different standard.
Right.
Like, if I see men in particular wearing a kippah on the train, and like an elderly woman gets on and they don't give their seat to her, I'm very upset with them.
Okay.
So I feel like you should know better, which is probably not good on my part. But, and I feel like with Ivanka, and again, I think it's with maybe not observant Jews, they're very critical of her, maybe unfairly, but now that it's out, people are very critical of her and, you know, are they breaking Shabbos? Are they, even though maybe they're not keeping it, but they're very critical because she has it out there. So,
right. So there. Okay. So the common theme that unites all your statements is that basically everybody is concerned about, you know, let's call them the haters or the judgers who if you're wearing a kippah, automatically avoid that you're being a perfect Jew. Well, nobody's a perfect Jew. Certainly, a person wears a kippah, they should endeavor to act in a moral, ethical manner, consistent manner. I know people that wear a kippah, but if they feel that their behavior is not going to be so good, they take it off. You know what I'm saying? They're the occasional wearers. You know, talking about it's, you know, they, whatever. So that's a category as well. That's a reality. All right, so first of all, what do you think about her in America, by the way, just give you a sociological context. In America, there's a fundamental belief that religion intrinsically is a private affair. Private affair. You know, or there's a rule inadequate, you don't talk about two things at a cocktail party. You don't talk about religion, and you don't talk about politics. You know, that's the classic rule. Okay? In America, since there is no official religion, everybody sort of keeps that part fundamentally hidden. Okay, so what do you feel the fact that she was open about, that she talked about, you know, that she converted to Orthodox Judaism, A, and B, that she found it enriching her life insofar as promoting her family, etc. You know, what's your reaction to that?
I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think talking about it helps normalize it.
Okay.
But there's nothing odd about really, one, being dedicated to your faith, regardless of what your faith may be.
Right.
And in the case of Ivanka and Jared Kushner, the fact that they observe Shabbat, whatever extent that they do, I think helps share that it's not this odd thing that remains in the shtetl, that it's something that is living, breathing a modern faith, and you can be a part of the modern world and still observe what you want to observe.
So in a certain sense, you've really answered question number three. Why is Ivanka Trump the ideal spokesperson for Shabbat? Because you're really, what you're saying is that here she is, she is a successful businesswoman. She is playing an important role in the current administration, and simultaneous to that, she is, and also she's a model, essentially.
Right. She's not perfect, but nobody's perfect.
Right. She doesn't claim, what they didn't quote in the, when she did the interview in Vogue, and you can Google it afterwards, or Google it now because I won't know, that she talks about, she framed it very nicely. It's like, we're more observant than some and less observant than others. So,
as evidenced by the inauguration.
Right. So, by the way, everybody was like down, you know, I want to get to what Suzanne pointed out and just sort of a halachic aside. So they claim, you know, they were traveling with, you know, limo, et cetera, on Shabbos, et cetera. And it came out that they asked the rabbi about getting a dispensation. So I don't know the particular details of the case, but it's not, by the way, from a halachic standpoint, it's not ridiculous, by the way. Because, as you have all been Rabbi Wall's next level class, anytime you have work done for you by a non-Jew, it's a rabbinic violation. Once you're dealing with rabbinic violation, other contexts, such as, in this case, pikuach nefesh, in other words, if the Secret Service says, we can't protect you if you're walking down the street, you know, not being in the limo, you know, I'm just making stuff up, you know what I mean? Or whatever, et cetera, whatever the situation is. So there, I don't know the details of the exact case, but I don't quickly dismiss that is halachically ridiculous. You know what I mean?
There have also been news reports about where they eat, and they might go to some places and they eat at restaurants in certain ways that are eating at non-kosher places. That comes out too.
Okay, so again, that's not so black. Those people who've been on my supermarket stroll know that you could go to a non-kosher restaurant and have a fruit salad. You could have, some vegetables. Look, obviously, again, they might be subscribing to a, uber modern Orthodox thing, which is allowing to have fish out, which is problematic if they're putting the fish on the same grill they just made the pork chop 5 seconds before, because that's not really defensible. But okay, leaving that aside. But I'm just saying, right, to go into Suzanne's point, once they're out there as being, observant Jews to whatever degree, then people are like, quick to criticize and, what kind of convert, all, as they say, the haters show up. So, again, I'm more now.
I thought the non-Jews respect you much more for being so true to religion. They're willing to work late one day a week, to leave early Friday, or willing to go pray during Mincha every week, every day during lunch break. They admire that, don't they?
No, by and large, they do. Many of the criticism people came from fellow Jews.
You have to look at with this family, people are also looking for something to make them into hypocrites. So, and there's a motive there. So,
okay, fine. All right. But I think that overall, by and large, let's say to America, who are not looking at these finer points, right? I think she is a very good spokesperson for Shabbat because she articulates Shabbat in a way that is meaningful to a non-Jew. Which gets to my question number four. Why should we what should we add to Ivanka's description of her Shabbat for a Jewish audience? That's not the same thing.
I think part of it is that her faith isn't just between the private relationship that she has with her husband, but that she has with her community, with Hashem.
Okay.
Well, again, value in that.
Right. The fact that, you know, again, she is, you know, when she's having an interview with Vogue, she understands her audience. So she may, or she's talking to the Vogue audience, which is primarily not Jewish. And maybe she'd feel that way, maybe she won't. I don't want to put words in her mouth. I don't know what she would say. But, okay, number one, yeah, Shabbat has to do with, you know, not just husband and wife and family, but has to do with God. Okay, you may have noticed that. Like, what other elements about Shabbat would she talk about? Would, you know, if she's speaking to, if she came to MJE, what would you like her to say? How about that? And by the way, if she came to MG, would you go listen to her speak?
Of course.
I'd be curious about what she does for her Shabbos dinners and Shabbos lunches. If she hosts them and has people over, or if she goes to other people's homes.
Well, by the way, that since now she has, they're being, you know, followed by a Korah paparazzi, the first Shabbat, and I think I shared this in maybe the senior fellowship, whatever.
Yeah, they went to Rabbi Shemtov's.
Well, they went to there, but also they hosted themselves half the cabinet. Many of them are Jews, some are not Jews, but they, of course, had it catered, you know. Whatever. So that's they're having a Shabbos meal. A nice, elegant Shabbos meal. What else would you add to her description to Shabbat? So one thing that Shana says, oh, who does she invite for Shabbos? What, you know, what's her Shabbos hospitality thing? Okay, what else?
They might be interested in knowing whether her children say the motzi. Who knows?
Well, I'm not talking about as far as to spin it the right way, but what would you like, no, just honestly, what would you like to hear about from her? You know, what would be impactful if she just, about her, if she's talking to a 100% Jewish audience, let's say speaking at MJE, what elements would you like to hear her speak about?
I'd love to hear her talk about her father and how he took her converting.
Okay, good.
Being a Reform Jew and like becoming Orthodox, when you're not Jew at all, you become Orthodox. That's much bigger of a leap than being a Reform and becoming
Bashi. Right. So Dave, I actually heard him speak about that. 2 years ago, Donald Trump was honored at the Allgemeiner Journal dinner, annual dinner. I go to a lot of dinners. I was at that dinner. Ivanka introduced him. You know, she's all about the class. And then Donald Trump shows up there. And then he says, and this is, I'm basically have the lines, and you can look it up on YouTube as well. But he said, look, I didn't know I was going to have a Jewish daughter. But now that I do, I'm happy with it. Or he was very positive about the fact that, A, having a Jewish daughter, you know, a daughter becoming Jewish, and B, having a Jewish son-in-law, you know. And ironically, as I think I mentioned in another class or whatever, that his other children are married to people who are Jewish or who have one member of the family is Jewish. All of them. It's like, I don't know, you know, and he's the wild thing.
What part of Shabbat speaks to her the most?
Okay.
Because she obviously gave up a lot to keep it. So what springs to mind for her would be interesting in that respect.
Okay. What else? Anybody else?
I know that she began dating Jared before converting, and due to Jared's mom and dad, they broke up for a brief period of time. So what made her want to take the full leap 2 years later and convert fully? Why didn't she, like, call quits after the first breakup back in, like, in 08 or whatever.
Well, my question was not any voyeuristic question you have about their relationship. No, my question was about Shabbat. I'm not, you know, limiting, not every question, you know, what's the deal there, you know. And so I'll just say what I would like to hear. I said, like, you know, how does Jewish learning, how does Shabbos and Jewish learning go together for you? You know what I mean? Something that would be good to hear is that not only that, you know, she's a convert, but she's continuing her Jewish studies, and Shabbat is the day to do that. I don't know if that's happening or not, you know. She could join the fellowship program right now. I would accept her right now.
No application needed?
Nah. We're good. That's it. So if she's out there listening, I'll just say, Ivanka, you know, we want you. Come on, join. But it's difficult now. She lives in Washington, D.C., and I don't think she could commit to a Wednesday night schedule. So anyways.
You'd make it work.
There's a limit. All right, let's go to this week's Parsha Vayakel. All right, let's have, it talks about Shabbat. The Torah talks about Shabbat nine or ten times, I forgot. So this is one of the times. Okay, let's have somebody read. Let's have Moshe Chaim Dodes read.
Oh, sure. Moshe assembled the entire Israelite community and said to them, "These are the words that Hashem has commanded for you to do. You may do work during the 6 weekdays, but Saturday must be kept holy as a Shabbat of Sabbaths to God. Whoever does any work on that day shall be put to death. Do not ignite any fire on Shabbat, no matter where you may live."
Okay, question number one. So why is the mitzvah of Shabbat repeated again? It's mentioned in the Ten Commandments. It's mentioned, you know, multiple times. What's up with the, why is Shabbat repeated so many times?
Well, if you think of the Torah as written in order, now would it come up again because of, like, last week's parsha being, like, the golden calf, so it's kind of, like, reinforcing the importance of Shabbat and, like, believing and respecting Hashem.
Okay. So you're saying that the fact is that in last week's parsha, the Jews had their epic fail of the sin of the golden calf involving a measure of idolatry, or at the very least, they're relating to an intermediary to God, you know, through a golden calf, that they need to recommit themselves to Hashem, and that way to do that is through a Shabbat. Okay, that's a solid answer. What else you guys got?
Doesn't the Talmud usually say that there's different reasons that we explicate from repetitions of things?
Absolutely. Correct. The assumption of the oral law is that if the Torah repeats something frequently, it teaches a new concept within it. And this parsha, it's no different. There's actually a whole litany of halakha that comes from this, one of which is that, as you all are familiar by now, that there are how many categories of work are there on Shabbat?
39.
And these categories are derived from what enterprise? What phenomena?
Tabernacle.
Building of the Mishkan.
Building of the Mishkan. Okay. Look carefully. What is unique in these three verses?
This one explicitly says that you may not light fire.
Ah. So that, the fact that one of them is being articulated explicitly, not just being a generality, you can't do melacha, you can't do work, you can't do craft on Shabbat, but it says you can't do any fire on Shabbat. Okay, so that's the question why is that being articulated? And the Talmud has a long discussion about why that's specified. I don't want to get into that whole thing, but that's, I just wanted to note that point there. What else? So one other reason is to teach us new halachot, which Moshe Chaim does. It, in fact, does. Okay. What other reasons can we put together?
It specifies during the week what you should be doing, and that malacha is important as well.
Well, it always says that. 6 days you should do work. It says that pretty much every time. there's no obligation to work, but that's the time that you're permitted to do your work. I mean, it's, the assumption is that it's natural to do work. They don't have to command you to do work because that's a natural state of man, of healthy people, of a healthy community. I mean, the fact is, it's from the most basic. Another reason why you have repetition terror is to underscore an important and vital theme. The theme of Shabbat is not just a mitzvah, it fundamentally is the mitzvah. You know what I'm saying? In other words, being a Shomer Shabbat is a core foundational principle that weaves in everything into one package. It's a platform for many mitzvot, which gets into my next question is, which is one of the shockers here, is why is there a death penalty associated with Shabbat? Nobody was hurt. And by the way, are you familiar when a person would get a death penalty for Shabbat?
Yeah, with witnesses and being warned and still doing it and all that stuff.
Correct. In other words, the terrorist death penalty is really, it's not so much a practical thing that there was a lot of capital punishment going on by the Jewish court system. It was important to have it on the books. But basically, let me just explain how, if a person is about to grill a steak on Shabbat, okay, and two kosher witnesses who are not relative to the said person says, if you do this, you will get the death penalty. The other person has to say, I don't care. I'm going to grill a steak anyways. Okay? So basically, it's talking about a person who is trying to make a major point against it. No person in their right mind would want to endanger themselves to do that. If a person does it privately in the comfort of their own home, well, nobody knows about that, and that's only between them and God, and it's not a death penalty, okay? But the question still remains, why such a severe punishment? You know, a person does it on purpose privately, there is an idea, and they know better, and that I underscore that know better, there is an idea of karet, being cut off from the Jewish people. It's a very severe punishment for doing a biblical violation. What's the idea? Why such a harsh? What's up with the harshness?
Is it to underscore the importance of the mitzvah of keeping Shabbat?
But the question is, so why is the mitzvah of Shabbat so important that you have such a epic punishment against it?
So I think Hashem for granted when Hashem led the Jews out of Egypt, Hashem said, "You will keep Shabbat because I led you out of Egypt." So in a way, it's sort of we recognize that there's someone greater than us.
Okay, so I like the way you're thinking there, Adam, because the key point is like this: that the keeping of Shabbat is not a neutrality. Shabbat is a celebration of God. We celebrate God as in two ways. A, that he is the creator. We lift the glass to start off Shabbos as a toast to God about either A, God as creator, and B, God as involved in Jewish history. Took us out of Egypt, as Adam accurately said. So to then, and this is the day to proclaim that on that day, a person knowingly, willingly violated a biblical commandment on Shabbat, that what would that say about his feeling toward God?
It would be disowning the key points that underscore religious belief. Saying God is not the creator, God is not involved in the world, God is not all-powerful, and I don't believe he has control over me, or that I should follow this.
Right, it's de facto a kind of denial of God. Because in other words, this is the day, which is the demonstration day, about your core beliefs. You know what I'm saying? You know, so as such, on Shabbat, if a person just blows it off, it's not just a being lazy, it actually has, I mean, again, we're talking about a person who does it knowingly and willingly and knows what Shabbat is all about. I'm talking about a Jew that never grew up and knows anything. I'm talking about a person who Like, I'm not talking about the 90% of American Jews that have no education. We're not counting about that. But if a person knows what Shabbat's all about, and then nevertheless, ignores it completely, that's a foundational statement about what they feel about God.
For essentially, like, rejecting Hashem?
Yes. It's a kind of rejection of God. So now you understand why the Torah amps up the punishment, because it's not just a little thing. It's not about grilling a steak or not grilling a steak. It's what you really believe is the day all about, and therefore what is God all about. And as Adam pointed out, you're really rejecting God. God took you out with a mission, and I'm not agreeing to that mission. So either means I don't... So therefore, either... What are the choices? Either I don't believe he exists. I believe he exists. I don't believe he's involved. He believes he's involved. I don't believe he gave these commandments. You know, whatever. It'll be some sort of rejection of some point. You know what I'm saying? Some kind of rejection. So let's get to question number 3. If Shabbat is essentially about quality family time, would there be a death penalty?
No.
No. So, no, at MJE, myself included, I do talk about the practical benefits to a person on a communal, personal, and familial way of Shabbat. Now, that is the benefit, but that's not really the essence of it. You know what I'm saying? That's a benefit of Shabbat. That's not why there is Shabbat. You know what I'm saying?
That's like talking about kosher as being about keeping it healthy and as opposed to God told us to, that kind of thing.
Correct. Right. There may or may not be health benefits for kashrut. That's a speculation. In modern science, a little hard to justify because we have a deeper understanding of health. Although it's not so simple, we're still discovering the area of nutrition is sort of an area which is complicated, as evidenced by the fact that still 95% of Americans can't keep to a diet. So if it was so simple to understand that, it would not be so challenging. Secondarily, also as there in these partio, the Jews are constructing the Mishkan. If it was all about quality family time, would you put the building of God's home on pause because you need to have a quality family time session?
No.
No, you would not. Correct. That is the right answer. Okay. So, now, the question is, going back to the question is, why does the... as going back to what Moshe Chaim pointed out, that this parsha teaches us a new halacha. The Torah repeats Shabbos for a reason. Rashi identifies that. It's a core expression of the law. Let's have Moshe Chaim Dodes read the Rashi.
According to Rashi, what does he mean by 6 days? He, Moshe, prefaced the discussion of the details of the work of the Mishkan with the warning to keep the Shabbat, denoting that it, which is the work of the Mishkan, does not supersede the Shabbat from Nechilta.
Okay. So that's an interesting thing. In other words, you apparently, if the Torah didn't, in other words, why does the Torah open the Parsha about Shabbat? Because you would have thought, and apparently rightfully so, that the mitzvah of Asuli Mikdash, build for me a temple, a place dedicated to God's service, would supersede what? Shabbat. Therefore, right before they're going to talk about the execution of the construction of the tabernacle, Moshe tells them about the mitzvah of Shabbat, that although the Mishkan is very important, it does not supersede, it does not trump, if I may use that word, trump Shabbat. Shabbat trumps the Mishkan, which of course is why?
Because you're building a relationship with God is paramount over building the physical place where you have a relationship with God.
Correct. The Mishkan is a tool of the service of God, but what's more primary is Shabbat. Everybody participates in it on a weekly basis versus the Kohat. You know, While the Mishkan you use three times a year, or the Kohanim represent us daily with the Voda. But the primary service, of course, is Shabbat. Shabbat is in the Ten Commandments. That's a primary service. The Mishkan is a tool of the service. Do you understand that? I'm not saying that's the only answer, but I think that's a quick, simple, direct, powerful response. So Moshe Chaim, I'm going to go with that. All right, let's go on. One said that was chapter 35. Okay, we're jumping back to last week's Parsha, but Shabbat was also talked about Shabbat last week, but I couldn't do it because we're doing something else in the Parsha. So while we're on the topic of Shabbat, we're going to do a little last week action. All right, so let's have Danielle. Babakasha, read us a little. Go on.
Okay. God told Moshe to speak to the Israelites and say to them, "You must still keep my Shabbat as a sign between me and you for all generations to make you realize that I, God, am making you holy. Therefore, keep the Shabbat as something sacred to you. Anyone doing work on the Shabbat shall be cut off spiritually from his people, and therefore anyone violating it shall be put to death. Do your work during the 6 weekdays, but keep Saturday as a Shabbat of Shabbats, holy to God. Whoever does any work on Saturday shall be put to death. Israelites thus keep the Shabbat, making it a day of rest for all generations, as an eternal covenant. It is a sign between me and the Israelites that during the 6 weekdays, God made heaven and earth, but on Saturday he ceased working and withdrew to the spiritual."
Okay, this is Rabbi Kaplan's translation. Okay. Well, this, by the way, you've seen this also. This is Vishamaru Ebne Yisrael et HaShabbat Allah. So that's from verse 16 on. Darotam Brit Olam. Okay. All right. You know it's more in the Hebrew than in the English. But now, question. What Shabbat is called a oat, a sign. What does that mean?
That it's representative of the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel. That it's symbolic, basically, of this bond.
Okay. So Shabbat is not just a day. So you're arguing that Shabbat is not merely a day which we observe. Celebrate God's relationship to the world as creator and being involved in history. You say also it's involved as a sign of the fact that the Jewish people are his people. Now it's interesting to note that that Shabbat actually has it's mentioned twice. So the question is, to me, that might be that there are two messages here. Any other ideas? What else could it mean? What else could Shabbat? What other idea of signs? What's a sign?
It's almost like the feeling of the same covenant as the Brit. Is the Brit Milah,
Oh, by the way, what is Shabbat also called? You just mentioned it.
A covenant.
A bris. It's also a covenant. So there's a bris that's a covenant of the relationship between the Jewish people. That's what Daniel is saying. And the sign of that, you know, so it's both a bris, a covenant, and a sign. But what else could it be a sign for? There's more opportunities here. Anybody? What else could it be a sign? How about to humanity? What about humanity? How can it be assigned to the other? What is a sign in general? What is a sign in general? Come on, guys. This is not so hard. What is generally a sign? Whether it be a stop sign, whether it be a billboard, what is the goal of signage in general in our life?
Message.
A little more. Okay, more than one word there, Sean. I feel I'm pulling it out of you guys. What's going on? What's the purpose of sign of general signs throughout, you know, in our whole world? You walk down the street, you're accosted by numerous signs.
It's a message to us.
A communication device.
Right, it's a tool of communication. So it's a message for us. It's also going to be a message to humanity.
To others.
Right. It's a message to us that there's a unique relationship. That's what Danielle said. It could also be a sign. To humanity that God is in fact the creator. In other words, that is the sort of the communication to a civilization. It's a civilizational sign. In other words, the Romans always had a hard time understanding why the Jews kept Shabbos. What are you guys, lazy? 1/7 of your life, you're not working? What's up with that? They could not wrap their head around that. And the bottom line, it's a sign, day designated for spiritual growth and communicating certain principles about God. Making the idea of God a reality in the world. And the truth is, it is weird. Because the natural goal is for a person to spend all their time pursuing their needs. The fact that the Jew is withdrawing is weird. But ultimately, not weird in a bad way, but that unusual lifestyle is of tremendous benefit. All right, let's continue.
What does that term Shabbat of Shabbats mean? Is that just a translation?
It's a translation of the word Shabbat, Shabbaton. A Sabbath of Sabbaths. Which is a good question. Why does the Torah use that? Interesting enough, Yom Tov is also called Shabbat. It's a day of ceasing. In other words, ceasing from malacha, not doing malacha. But Shabbos is the it's like the ultimate stopping. What other holiday is called the Shabbat Shabbaton? Only one other holiday is called the Shabbat Shabbaton.
Yom Kippur.
Who said that?
David.
David, very good. That's a hard one.
I heard it before.
All right. Well, all right, David. Your news brief. You're allowed to retain the information you learn at MJE. That's kind of the goal. You know, when I ask a question and there's crickets out there, I don't feel incredibly good about that when I know that I've taught that 12 times. So the fact that we shared the information, you retain the information, that's a good thing. So thank you. Thank you very much. All right, finishing on up here. Okay, let's do a little Isaiah. David, for that, you get to read the verses from Isaiah.
Sure. Let me try to... Sorry, I'm...
You can do the English if you're feeling, you can do it.
Also, the non-Jews that join themselves to the Lord to minister, to him and to love, to love the name of the Lord and to be his servants. Everyone that keeps the Sabbath from profaning it. Profaning?
You're profaning it and hold fast by my covenant.
Even them will I bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices shall be acceptable upon mine altar, for my house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples.
Okay, so question number one. What is the Mikdash, the temple called, referred to by the temple, by the prophet Isaiah? What is it? What has another name? What is the temple called? It's right there in the English.
My Holy Mountain.
So it's called My Holy Mountain. A, what else?
My house.
House of prayer. For
house of prayer. In Hebrew, ki beiti, my house, beitifila yikare lechomim. So what's the goal of the temple? Who's supposed to go there?
All of B'nai Israel.
Only B'nai Israel?
Everyone.
Lecholamim, for all the peoples, Jew and non-Jew alike. It is the international center for service of God, Jew and non-Jew alike. We want non-Jew to observe, to accept the seven Noahide laws, one of which is to believe in God, and part of that is believing God is to pray to Him. They don't have to pray, but they're welcome to. And what else can they do there?
Make sacrifices.
They can bring sacrifices. In other words, this is actually a universal message of Judaism. Judaism is not just for Jews. The goal of Judaism is for all of humanity. Each person has a role to play. Now, so the first term says B'nei HaNechar, the children of the, they were non-Jews. I got to check that. What is that referring to? So, but what else? What service does it talk about? The core. What are the core elements? What does verse 6 talk about? What's the core element of a Jew?
To keep the Sabbath.
That's one. What else?
Love the name of Hashem.
Love the name Hashem. To serve. So it's to serve Him, love Him, and to keep Shabbos. Isaiah, Yeshayahu points out what the essence of being a Jew is. There's, it's like all the mitzvos, loving God, serving God, and serving God, which represents all the mitzvos, but one mitzvah gets highlighted. Now, the famous phrase that I'm sure you've heard is that not only have the Jews kept Shabbos, but Shabbos has kept the Jew. In other words, Shabbos is significant, A, because it's a tool, it's a profound tool of growth, it's a profound change of a person's life, basically. It really brings in all the mitzvot together. It's a day which I'm not where I'm thinking about God. I daven more, I learn more, I'm with my community, I'm with my family. It's a day of rejuvenation. So it's a core principle. It's a very core principle. So my original question, is it weird to be Shomer Shabbat? In a certain sense, yes. It is weird compared to humanity's basically 24/7 rat race mentality. Yeah, this makes you a little weird. But this makes you weird, and it's different from, but on the other hand, ultimately, it is really one of the most the mitzvah that really enriches life dramatically and with very quickly without, it's not something that you have to, learn for 5 years to benefit from Shabbos. You can benefit from Shabbos basically even from your first Shabbos. Now that's what my assertion is. What do you say? Have you found keeping Shabbos to the degree that everybody does, has that been beneficial to you? Is that, and what way has it been beneficial?
I think that Ivanka Trump said it correctly. She pointed out every attractive part of Shabbat: detachment, being with family, talking to them. I love keeping it for that reason alone.
Right. Okay.
Putting my phone away for an entire day is a phenomenal feeling.
Okay.
Can I offer something?
Go ahead. Moshe Chaim Dodes.
So for my wife and I, it's a wonderful thing to have in common and to share and to value. And even though it is about our relationship to God, something that we share together in that dedication. So
that's very nice. Anybody else want to share anything? Well, I'll just, so then I'll share from my perspective. For me, the day that I get to learn the most is Shabbat. You know, other than teaching and preparing for classes at MG, most of my day is spent, you know, running the mechanics of MJE, which is basically a not, you know, it's a not-for-profit organization. So I'm not different from a guy who works for the American Heart Association. We do many of the same things. You know what I'm saying? Now, I get to teach and I get to learn, you know, prepare for that during the day, which is a little bit different than other people. And I get to, you know, research and ask, you know, questions, and I get to meet with students. That's a little bit different. Sort of the rabbinical piece. But the day that I really have a chance to learn is Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's the day that, so that's, that and that's really, so that's really a day of growth for me as well. In addition to all the things that David said, is all, I read all that as well. And it's a day where I struggle with my weight the most also, but that's not necessarily a benefit, but whatever. That's an additional factoid. Anyway, so that's a little taste of that. And something to think about. The question is it how open do you want to be with that? Do you want to share this? Do you not want to share this? Is it on need-to-know basis, etc.? Well, that's something you got to think about. All right, we talked about a lot of issues here, and I will see a bunch of you tomorrow night, and I think I'm going to see all of you guys on Thursday night. Yes. All right, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you.
All the best. Congrats.